As social creatures living on an inhabited planet, it is impossible to avoid associations with fellow human beings. Now, there are those who try. You would talk about monasteries or whatever, nunneries, but it's virtually impossible to avoid association with fellow human beings at work, at school, in your neighborhood, in church. And as Christians, it is important that our dealings with other people be conducted in wisdom. As a matter of fact, if you want a title for the sermon this afternoon, it is Wisdom in Matters of Friendship. Now, I prepared this sermon for Dallas. I've already given it up there. We have a goodly number of preteens and teenagers. And so my focus was obviously for everyone. We all listened to a sermon, and hopefully we gained something from it. But my primary focus there was to give the sermon for our youth, our preteens, our teenagers, maybe young adults, who are just beginning life, really, just beginning life. And decisions that they make as youth, and the youth here, when it comes to friendship, can be life-altering in a positive way or in a negative way. You know, Paul wrote to the Colossians, if you want to turn to Colossians chapter 4. Paul wrote to the Colossians, and we'll see that he primarily was talking about what they would call non-believers. Okay, non-believers. Colossians chapter 4. Though specifically speaking to our conduct with those who don't believe, maybe as we do, it would still apply to Christian friends as well. Colossians chapter 4, beginning in verse 5. He says, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. And of course, we know we're also told to be able to give an answer for the hope that lies within us. You know, God in his really all-sufficient word, his all-sufficient word, has provided the wisdom necessary whereby we can develop good relations with those around us and avoid the pitfalls that too often destroy good friendships. Now, there's a particular book in the Bible that discusses this subject quite extensively, and I'm sure all of you can guess what book that is, right? Anybody guess what book I'm referencing in the Bible? Yeah, Proverbs. Proverbs discusses this subject extensively, to say the least. So while turning to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 17, let's note first what it says about the value of a good friend. The value of a good friend. First of all, a friend is someone who can be a source of comfort. A source of comfort. Now, before I moved with my father, I was halfway through my freshman year in St. Louis. And the seventh, eighth, and half of my freshman year, a kid, and he was just that, a kid named Jackie Collins and I were inseparable. We were virtually inseparable. We did anything and everything together. I ended up with a bicycle. He was about 3 inches taller than I, outweighed me by about 75 pounds. So he would pump me all around St. Louis, actually Wellston, on the bike. I'd sit on the handlebars and he would pump away, you know. And we went everywhere. Virtually inseparable. And I thoroughly enjoyed his company. I would label him at that time as a very close friend. And they can be a source of comfort. Notice Proverbs 17 and verse 17. A friend loves at all times. Definitely the good times. Jackie and I had a lot of good times. And I would say, for the most part, good times. Okay. We didn't really seek to get into any kind of trouble. I'll tell them myself. I was in the seventh grade, and at Walson Junior High School, it became popular for seventh graders to smoke. Anybody remember that many, many moons ago? So I thought that's what I would do. So I, you know, was able to get a couple of cigarettes from, I even forget from whom. And so I tried smoking a couple of cigarettes. Now, I loved athletics, you know, baseball, football, basketball at that particular time. And I came to my senses that if I wanted to participate in sports, I really didn't need to be smoking. Didn't need to be impacting my lungs. So those are the only two cigarettes I've ever smoked in my life, okay? But you know what? Jackie Collins refused. He just refused. He said, nah, Frank, he says, I don't want to put that in my lungs. He says, you don't need to be doing it either. A friend is someone you can be a source of comfort and also, of course, a source of counsel. And Jackie and his wisdom as a seventh grader understood it wasn't good for him and it definitely wasn't good for me. And we both were involved with athletics, you know, through junior high and our freshman year, at least half the freshman year. So, they're a source of comfort in the bad times, as well as the good times. There wasn't anything at that time that I could not discuss with Jackie. He would listen, and probably 99% of the time he would agree with me because we were good friends. But occasionally he would say, well, Frank, I don't know if we need to look at it that way. As I look back over it, you know, Jackie was quite mature for a seventh grader. You know, for a seventh grader. He was not one that would just go along with the crowd for the sake of going along. And I appreciate that now, sharing that with all of you, all the young people here, that having a good friend is great. Hopefully your good friends are more in the faith, but, you know, there are some high school kids and junior high school kids today that have decent standards. I don't think there are as many as what they were when I was a kid. But having a good friend is not a bad thing. They can be a source of enjoyment. Jackie and I probably spent back then, because my mother let me pretty much do anything I wanted, we probably spent during the summer every other weekend at one or the other's house. And by that I meant spending the night, just enjoying each other's company socially. It says, and a brother is born for adversity. Now notice Proverbs 18, verse 24. Verse 17 says, a brother is born for adversity. Proverbs 18, 24 says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. Must be friendly. And there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So we see here that a brother is born for adversity, but there can be a friend who actually sticks closer than a brother. I've been aware, you know, 50 plus years in the ministry, of brothers and sisters that didn't always get along, were at each other's throat, 30, 40, 50 years of age. In one situation, two brothers hadn't talked with each other in 35 years. And it was a small matter that caused the conflict, as I learned the story. But a friend, I do honestly believe that Jackie would have done pretty much anything for me. If I had a desperate need, as much as he could as a 7th, 8th, and 9th grader. No show of hands, but do you have a friend like that today? You have to answer that question yourself. Now, if you don't, that's not a sin, because you do have a very close friend that you can turn to and discuss anything with, and that's your elder brother, our big brother, Jesus Christ, who says he calls us what? I call you friends, because I deliver unto you all that I have been taught or all that I know. I share it with you. And that's what friends do. Friends share with each other. Proverbs 27, verse 9, the value of a good friend. Again, a friend is someone who can be a source of good counsel. Proverbs 27, verse 9. Ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. You see, someone who's willing to give you hearty counsel, agreeing with you with whatever it is you're discussing when you're right, but is willing to, in a very polite way and kind way, say, well, you know what, Frank, maybe you shouldn't look at it that way. Maybe you're overreacting, you know. Maybe he didn't mean that, or she didn't mean that. Giving you wise counsel. Maybe you need to kind of just forget about it and try to, you know, make up with the individual or work with the individual. That's what a friend will do. Proverbs 11:14 gives the value of counsel in a general sense. Proverbs 11, verse 14, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So if you've got a big decision to make about a particular subject, it's wise to find people who are knowledgeable in that area. Find out what they have done, where they have been successful, what they've done that has not been successful, and ask them about it instead of just, boom, heading off 1,000 miles an hour because this is what I want to do. Again, my time in the ministry, I have witnessed individuals who have just gone off like a herd of horses because this is what they want to do and didn't really think it through enough and talk with enough people to possibly save themselves from making a big mistake. No, a good friend is someone you can bounce ideas off of. A good friend cares for you, so we'll seek to give good counsel. I say again, a good friend. So let's consider then advice on the selection of friends. Our young people in the audience, and all of us really. Advice on the selection of friends. First of all, people you do not want as friends. People that you want to stay away from. Number one, gossips. Gossips. Now, my wife and I moved into a community called Pinnacle Club. It's a nice addition that we thoroughly enjoy. And as my friend and I like to do, play golf. I didn't play a whole lot of golf when I was in the ministry, maybe two or three times a summer, and then many years would go by when I didn't play it off. And I told my wife that when I retired, I'm going to play more golf. So I actually been trying to get out 2 to 3 times a week now. I mean, I'm retired. As long as my money holds out, I'll be able to play a little more golf. And because of that, I've gotten to know many of the people in the addition, probably more people in this addition than I've ever known, you know, as neighbors in the past. And some of them have become good friends. I won't say they're bosom buddies, but have become good friends. And they seem to be people of decent character. But there's one couple in the neighborhood. They are known as gossips. Now, I didn't know this when I first moved in, but I was talking with them, and one of the guys with me said, "Hey, Frank," he says, "I don't like talking about people." And he doesn't. He doesn't talk about people in general. And he says, "But just a heads up," he says, I'm going to make up a fictitious name. Bob and Janet are known as the gossips of Pinnacle Club. I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah, they are friendly, enjoyable to be around," and they are. I've been around them numerous times now. But they want to know anything and everything that is going on in your life. And they will ask you probing questions to find out things that they don't really need to know about. And I found that to be true, you know, as I interacted with them more. And he says that we all are friendly with them, but whenever they try to probe, we just kind of change the subject. You know, we move on. Because they not only want to know what everyone thinks and what everyone does, but they also want to share it with others. Okay? They want to share with others. And they're very astute in how they do this. Okay? It's so-and-so is having a problem. Well, let me tell you about Harriet and George. They're having a really horrible marriage problem. But I tell you this so that you can pray for them. No, they just want to share the fact that these people are having these problems, okay? And they want everybody to know. So you want to be careful about hanging around with gossips. Proverbs 20. In verse 19, says, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. That's something they get a thrill out of. Therefore, do not associate with one who uses his lips. Other translations put it this way. I like the way they put them. That's why I wrote them down. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with gossips. Do not associate with those who talk too much. Do not associate with a big mouth. A big mouth. So be aware of that. Next point, advice on who not to have as friends. I put two categories down. Short-tempered and those given to violence. Short tempers and those given to violence. Proverbs 22, 24. Proverbs 22, 24 says this. Make no friendship with an angry man or an angry woman. Matter of fact, Proverbs says that it's better to dwell in the attic of your house than with an angry woman. But you know that would reverse would be true too, with an angry man. So make no friendship with an angry man. And with a furious man, do not go. Don't hang around, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your souls. And those given to violence, I'm not going to read that one. Proverbs 1, verses 10 through 19, if you want a reference, basically tells you the same thing. That all they want to do is be involved with violence. Now, have you ever known somebody like that? I'm going to tell you a story about a guy by the name of Bill Tizan. You don't know him. He's been dead for quite a while. But he's a good example for a sermon. Okay, Bill Tizan. Before I moved with my father, as it says, freshman in high school, I lived for a short period of time, obviously with my mother, behind my Uncle Vince's tavern. And it was a tavern, not a cocktail lounge. Okay, it was a tavern. Matter of fact, a lot of my uncles had taverns. That was the environment in which they grew up. My Uncle Tully had a tavern. My grandpa had a tavern. Uncle Vince had a tavern. And out in the back of his tavern, there was a parking lot just covered with rock, stone. And we lived right behind his tavern. And I'm going to guess I was probably 8 or 9 at that particular time, and I'm walking out across the back of the tavern in the parking lot, and out from the back door came Bill Tizan and 3 quote-unquote friends. They worked together in construction. They would come into Uncle Vince's tavern probably 3 times a week after they got off work, you know, all muddy boots, and they would sit down and they all have beer. And Bill Tizan was the leader. He was a dominant personality, but he was a sharp-tempered individual and given to violence. He's the type of individual that when he went, you know, on a Saturday night to Uncle Vince's tavern, because they had a little room off to the side. Some of you old folks will appreciate this. They had a room off to the side where, you know, they would have tables and they'd have entertainment. And the one entertainment that they had on a regular basis was somebody who sat it on a stool, playing the guitar, singing with a harmonica attached, and a drum with his foot, boom, boom. Anybody ever witnessed somebody like that? So I know some of you old folk have. I have, obviously, numerous times because my Uncle Vince's tavern. But Uncle Vince finally had to tell Bill Tizan, Bill, you're coming in for a Saturday. He said, look, he says, if you're going to be here this evening, I don't want any trouble from you. No fights allowed. And he had to warn him about that number of times, because if he didn't, Bill would possibly just pick a fight with somebody. Sometimes he did it anyway. Well, the story I want to tell you is Bill Tizon and these three guys came out of the back room, and this back room had a little, you know, pool table with cue sticks and whatever. And when they came out, I noticed that Bill Tizon had a cue stick in his hand. And he had a hold of the fat side. And so I stopped, maybe about 40, 50 feet from them. And Bill says, "Okay, we're going to settle this like men. You two have been having a conflict this time. So fight. Whoever wins, we'll go with his answer, decision, whatever." Now, these guys didn't want to fight. But Bill Tizon said, "This is how we're going to handle this conflict." And so they started dancing. All right? They're supposed to be fighting. Bill expected them to, you know, put the dukes up and go at it. All they did, they hugged each other, and they kind of went around. They didn't want to fight. Finally, they ended up on the ground, still hugging each other. Bill Tizon takes this cue stick and begins to beat both of them over the back with the skinny end. Bam, 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 bam. And I'm standing there watching this, you know, big-eyed, you know, kid. And Bill says, "Get up, get up. That's not fighting. Get up, stand up. Punch each other." And finally, they both yell, "Bill, stop hitting us." So they get up. He says, "Okay, fight." Same thing happens. They don't want to fight each other. They've been friends for who knows how long. And so they once again start, you know, kind of wrestling with each other. I call it a dance. And finally, they end up on the ground. What does Bill Tizon do? He takes the cue stick, and he starts beating him on the back again. And they both yell, "Bill, stop beating us." He says, "Get up." So they get up, and he says, "You guys are going to fight?" And they said, "No." He said, "Well, let's go ahead and have another beer." I mean, that's the environment in which I grew up. One of the greatest blessings I had was moving with my dad as a freshman in high school. My entire environment changed, you know. But that was my environment growing up. So a short-tempered are those given to violence. You know, don't hang around them. Because if you do, they might end up getting upset and mad and starting a fight with somebody. And that somebody has three or four friends. And you're there with him, and he expects you to do what? Jump into the fray with him. Take these other guys on. That's not a very good thing to do. Especially if you're outnumbered, okay? Not a good thing, especially if you're outnumbered. So don't, you know, stay away from short-tempered men or women who are given to violence. Number three, again, in selection of friends or who to avoid, those given to drinking and gluttony. Proverbs 23 and verse 20. "Do not mix with wine bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags." There are other problems that are not written here, but are just as applicable. If you mix with wine bibbers or those who indulge way too much, you can have other problems and difficulties arise. Drunkenness is one of the top three reasons for divorce in this nation. Because often a drunkard is a person who also has a short temper. Now, there are different type of drunks. I realize that. There's a melancholy drunk that when you get too much, you go, you know, just cries all the time. I had an uncle like that. Okay, then you have the know-it-all. He gets drunk and he knows everything about everything. Okay, and then you have an angry drunk. And those are the ones that can really, really, really cause major problems and difficulties, especially in a marriage. I'm going to give you an example again about the difficulty with hanging around those who drink too much, young people. I was just moved into a particular church area. I'd been there maybe about 3 weeks. And I got a call from one of the members who said, "Hey, I need to talk with you, counsel with you." And I said, "Sure." So he explained to me what he was dealing with. And he said, "I've got I've got a son. Yeah, I think they had two sons and a daughter. I've got a son who's a junior in high school, and he's gotten caught up with the wrong crowd. And he says they like after school to get beer and drive around, these roads. And it was northern Indiana, a lot of narrow roads, with these old abutments. I'm sure you're familiar with these narrow roads that come together, and then you've got these concrete, abutments that go across a creek. You know what I'm referencing there? And he says he's out with these guys after school, not every night, but often. He says they get beer and they go driving around. I've talked with my son because I had one of the other parents talk with me. And I've talked with my son about not doing that. He said, "Oh, Dad, it's no problem." He says, "We're not getting drunk." He says, "Well, son, first of all, it's illegal." I don't know who was buying the beer or how they got them, but, he says it's illegal. And not only that, drinking and driving is just not a good thing. He said, "Do you mind coming out and, and visiting with my son and straightening him out?" I've been there 3 weeks. So I says, "You know what?" I said, "Before I sit down with your son and we talk," I said, "it'd be nice if I can somehow build some type of rapport, with the kid. So maybe we can get together for dinner." He says, "Yeah." He said, "I'm going out for a week on a business trip. And when I get back, I'll invite you and your wife out, new pastor in the area, new wife, and you can come out and we'll just socialize and you can meet my children." And I said, "Well, that'd be great." And I said, "I'll try to especially set aside some time just to talk with him specifically about anything and everything except drinking and driving at that particular time. Build some type of rapport." So I asked him, "What does he like?" He said, "Well, he loves baseball. He plays on the high school baseball team, and he's an avid Chicago Cubs fan." I said, "That's perfect, because I'm an avid St. Louis Cardinal fan." And the Cubs and the Cardinals always have this rivalry, right? I said, "We'll be able to convince and joke with each other and, blah, 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 blah." He said, that's a good idea. So we get off the phone. He's on his trip. It's about 3 or 4 days later, and I get a phone call from him. And he's in tears. I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "Well, I just found out that my son was killed in an automobile accident. I said, "Really? What happened?" And he explained to me that in the sheriff's department, because it was in a county, and this particular county didn't have a whole lot of police officers, he said the best they can come up with is that they'd gotten a six-pack of beer, and they're driving after school on these country roads. And they'd gone through four, four in the car. And each one had a beer, and there were two left. And his son was sitting in the passenger seat of the front seat, And he says that their educated guess was that the driver had the beer, and the kid behind him asked for what? A drink. So he's driving this two-lane road, and he says when he turned to hand the beer, what happens? Your hand moves a little bit. And the car hit an abutment, concrete abutment, straight on, no brakes, full bore. His son in the front seat died, and another kid in the back seat died. The driver survived, and a kid in the back seat survived. And it was sad. You talk about parents who were heartbroken, a brother and a sister who were heartbroken, and yet all because he wouldn't listen to his father, number one, and being involved with someone who was involved with alcohol at a young age and driving. What is the scripture? What is the fifth commandment? Anybody remember the fifth commandment? Honor your father and mother. What's the rest of it? That your days may be long. If this kid had just listened to his father, honored his father and his mother, he might be alive yet today. But he didn't. So, young people, all of us really, be careful hanging around, especially in high school, with those given to drinking. Stay away from those who drink and drive. You potentially could end up like this other teenager. I mean, you may not. Some of you adults out here may have done this when you were kids, right? And you're here today. In some respects, it's Russian roulette. So the better part of wisdom is don't do it. Remember, Wisdom in Matters of Friendship is the title of the sermon. Number four, under advice, who not to hang around with, those given to change. Those given to change. Proverbs 24, 21 through, well, 21 and 22. Proverbs 24, 21. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Have deep respect and reverence for them. And do not associate with those given to change. For their calamity will rise suddenly. And who knows the ruin those two can bring. Now, this isn't talking about making positive changes in your life, okay? Don't misunderstand. The Bible talks about repentance, which means change. But you're changing from, shall we say, the bad to the good. If you learn that you made a mistake about something for a few weeks, it's wise to change from doing that and doing something that is right and correct. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about someone who changes just for change's sake. Oh, well, you know, I've read this over here about the Sabbath being abrogated. Well, that sounds pretty good. And then he changes something else. So it can be a religious factor, but it also can just be life in general. Changing for changing's sake. Now, no show of hands. How many here when you were younger were caught up with fads? The latest thing that came around, you had to have it, or you had to do it. Change for change's sake. You know, it's not a wise. And if you're hanging around somebody like that, he can have you or she can have you changing your own life just over and over and over. Matthew Henry says this. Have nothing to do, he does not say, with those that change, for there may be a cause to change for the better, but those that are given to change, that affect change for change's sake. I've known a few people like that. Those that are restless, so they've got to have something new. Factious, turbulent spirits commonly pull mischief upon their own heads that they may not even be aware of by all the changes that they make. So be aware of those who are given to change. Next, liars, those untrustworthy, and those inconsiderate. Proverbs 25. Verse 18. Proverbs 25 and verse 18. Again, liars, those untrustworthy, and those who are inconsiderate. Proverbs 25, verse 18. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. Now, a club is bad enough, right? Or a sword or a sharp arrow, but here it's likened to all three. They all three do a lot of damage. So he who bears false witness against his neighbor, you know, who's involved with being untrustworthy, don't hang around with these type people, young people. Stay away from them. Confidence, verse 19. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. Confidence in an unfaithful man is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. Because you think you have a commitment and you don't. I've been blessed to, sidebar here, to be involved with construction. I've always enjoyed being a general contractor all my life. I didn't do it all that much. being in the ministry, but I enjoyed doing it. I was blessed to be able to build our last three houses myself while being a general contractor. And I would go out at 8 o'clock and meet a subcontractor, and I'd take care of my business. They would work. And a couple of houses when I was younger, the house I built in Florida, I took a week's vacation, and I helped my roofer roof the house. Took vacation time to do that. In Ohio, I took vacation time to help my sub put siding, you know, cedar siding on the side of the house. I've always enjoyed that type of thing, and I've been trying to do a little bit of that here. I built a house on Cedar Creek Lake in Maybank using subs. I could spend a little more time since I was retired, but I've always enjoyed that. But the one thing I learned about subcontractors here in at least our part of the world is they aren't really trustworthy. Any of you contractors or people ever experienced that with trying to get somebody to do a job for you? Just not all that trustworthy. Things went fairly well when I first started building the house down here. Subs were showing up. I was halfway through and the tide changed. And I'll be there to start the job Monday. Monday came and went. I had a day laborer that I hired to help him. I had him there. He never showed up. I just figured he would be there. So I called him up. Oh, yeah, I know you. I'll be there tomorrow. Something came up. I didn't bring the day laborer out. Never showed up. And that happened on a number of subcontractors for the rest of the house. I was actually about a month ahead of schedule with everybody. And then all of a sudden when I finished 4 months late based on these subcontractors. I've got a friend in the addition who wanted to put a patio on the back of his house. He was telling me that he contacted 5 different people on the phone. Well, say, I'll be out there. I'll just pick a date. Anyway, call them. I'll be out there Monday to give you a bid. Look at it and give you a bid. Check out space. 5 different ones. Only one showed up to give him a bid. He looked at it, said, I'll be back with you Friday, you know, with I think's the cost. Never heard from him. Never heard from him. He called him up. Never got an answer. Left a message. Never called him back. He finally ended up having to build the patio himself. You know, he hired I think it was a backhoe to help dig it out from U-Rent-It, and had the stone and the blocks brought in from the company. Used the front end loader to move it all around, and he got it done. It took about a month and a half, but he got it done. And I guess the only bright spot or positive thing about it is he saved a lot of money, right? He didn't have to pay these people to do the job. But he said it was just so frustrating because he didn't want to do it. And with him, money wasn't an object. You know, he did well with his business, sold his business for a substantial amount of money. He was retired. He just did not want to do the work. But if he wanted to have the patio, he ended up having to do it himself. And then, by the way, he did a great job. You know, he's got the patio built. He's got a little waterfall and stream going from one side to the other. Looks really, really, really good. But you could just hear the frustration, you know, when you talk with him. So be careful hanging around people who are unfaithful, because they can end up, when you're counting on them, cause you a headache. Now, there were 3 subcontractors that I used who were very faithful. Showed up when they said they would be there, or if something did come up, they would call. Say, hey, look, not going to be there at 8, like I said. I'll be there at 1 because I had to take my wife to the hospital or whatever. It was some reason, legitimate. Always showed up. Guess what I have in my, as we used to call them, Rolodex? I have their name, their profession, and their telephone number. Because they proved to be reliable in what they did. So what sort of friends do you want? If you're avoiding these, what kind of friends do you want? Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13. Verse Well, first of all, before we go there, no, let's go there. Proverbs 13. Verse 20. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Then Proverbs 13, verse 14. Tie these two together. Proverbs 13, back to verse 14. The law of the wise is a fountain of life, to turn one away from the snares of death. Now, I think as you get older, even older teenagers, you really innately have the ability, for the most part, to tell if somebody is wise or giving you a good advice, you know. Not as much, possibly, as when you become an adult. I've seen some teenagers, forget that, I've seen some adults that, you know, you wonder where the wisdom is. But we find Proverbs stating that those who display wisdom themselves, that's who you want to hang around with, who you want to be with. How many here were ever part of an apprentice program? Anyone? Well, my oldest son, Rick, when he was in high school, he was a junior, was able to be an apprentice, have a mentor by the name of Chuck Daniels. Anybody know who Chuck Daniels is? He was one of the members in Dallas when I pastored. And he was one of the managers for IBM. And they were going to hire a couple of students as part of their apprentice program. And so he asked Rick if he would like to be a part of that. And of course, Rick jumped at it. And so his junior and senior year, he worked with Chuck Daniels at IBM. And he was able to learn a lot. Learn a lot about the corporate world, the business world. And, you know, Chuck was wise in how he conducted himself in the business world. And so Rick was able to be benefited from that, you know, having a mentor or being an apprentice. And then when he went off to Ambassador College, you know, his brother Scott was 2 years behind him. So Scott moved into his position at IBM for 2 years and worked as an apprentice, being mentored by Chuck Daniels. And they both have commented more than once how great a blessing that was to be in that environment, to be around somebody who has a little bit of wisdom in how he deals with life, especially in the corporate world. Now, some of you older folk here, who've been around forever, since the time of Adam and Eve, may remember Mr. Armstrong's comment. I heard him mention it more than once. It's in his autobiography. He was talking about how he always tried to hang around successful people. Anybody remember reading that? He always tried hanging around successful people because he could learn success from them or how they conducted themselves. And he was in advertisement at the time. I also remember how he said he used to pay the somebody who worked at the hotel to come and knock on his door and make sure he got out of bed. He said, one of my weaknesses is not wanting to get out of bed. So, you know, he would have a steward or whatever come and knock on the door to make sure he got out of bed and just didn't sleep through his alarm clock. Mr. Bank was shaking his head. He probably remembers that too. Not that he was doing that, but he remembers Mr. Armstrong making that statement. So it's a good thing to be around wise people and to learn from them. Proverbs 13, 14, I think we did read. The law of the wise is a fountain of life, to turn one away from the snares of death. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. We just read, but I want to read it from the paraphrased version. Proverbs 13 and verse 20 says, be with wise men and become wiser. Be with evil men and become evil. Puts it a little bit more direct. A little more direct. So Paul does emphasize that The wrong kind of friends can be a corrupting influence. But a friend who is good and wise is the one you want to hold on to. Matter of fact, notice that in 1 Corinthians 15. Man, where did the time go? Guess what, brethren? We're going to have a two-part sermon. You'll have to wait until I come back next time. I've still got about 35, 40 minutes of material. I didn't think it would go this long. It didn't go this long in Dallas. You're just easier to talk to. That's all it is, okay? All right, let's wrap it up with this verse, and then I'll pick up on advice on maintaining good friendships. We'll get into the positive aspects next time. 1 Corinthians 15, in verse 33, young people, do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. We might say today, don't kid yourselves, right? Don't kid yourselves. Evil company corrupts good habits. Evil company corrupts good habits. We've discussed who not to hang around with. Okay? Corrupt company. Verse 34, awake to righteousness and do not sin. For some do not have the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. If you go back and do a study on that section of Scripture, you'll find where he's kind of chiding them because some in Corinth, which was a city filled with debauchery. And some of the members, you know, were impacted by that. Matter of fact, that's what they were involved with when they were called. And some of them were being, shall we say, seduced or influenced to go back into their old lifestyle. Coney Barenhausen, The Life and Epistles of Paul, has a section on that. And that's why he says, look, evil company corrupts good habits. You were of that nature, remember what Paul said? But now you have changed and you're different. So I guess from the standpoint of what we've covered so far is remember 1 Corinthians 15, 33 as a summary. Evil company corrupts good habits.